Welcome to Light Being Found. My love Jason was in the U.S. Army. 20 days after I found him, I started documenting my journey through video and audio recordings. Join me as I share my journey as a suicide loss survivor, from struggling to find the light to light being found. Hello, loves. Welcome to the Suicide Loss Survivor Podcast, Light Being Found. This is Season 1, Episode 1. And it's a very special day for me and for many. It's Veterans Day. I found Jason just about 6 months ago on May 10th. May 11th was his birthday. He was in the military, and it's a special day for me, for sure, as it is for so many. In today's episode, I really want to go over some, like, when I was reflecting on what's the podcast going to be about. It's going to be about me sharing videos along the way, but there's some core things that popped up in my mind right away that I just wanted to kind of go over and share with you so you can kind of know what the podcast will entail. There are various different topics. The first one was, I found him. Now what? Like, there were so many emotions pulsing through me. And to say I had ever felt shock before would be a gross understatement. So many things were happening to my body. I know immediately my hands got completely sweaty, and our dog, actually, Jai is her name. I turned the corner and Jai was pawing at him, and as soon as I had realized and understood what happened, my first thoughts were, I have to get her to a safe place. I automatically did not want her to be traumatized. So, you know, in hindsight, it's interesting to kind of reflect back on those emotions pulsating and then, like, the different actions that come into play almost automatically. But at the same time, like, I wasn't in the driver's seat to a certain extent, because shock just it just pulsates out of every part of my being. So it's almost like this bizarre autopilot from, like, wow, what do I do now? And then also what, like, a sheer disbelief. So all of those emotions coupled together in just a whirlwind of hormones also coming out at the same time was wild. So I know I'll talk in great detail about my experience from calling 911 to the police and detectives and everyone showing up, the countless line of questioning that was repetitive from multiple different law enforcement individuals, and, like, just how I navigated that. But, like, there's no way to prepare for something that's so incredibly shocking to the core. So I'll be discussing that. And then also another thing was letting loved ones know. I grappled with that. I didn't know what to say or necessarily how to say it. And luckily I was able to call a family member, and then they were able to reach out to the other important members of the family. From that point, I didn't have to continue calling family member after family member after family member. But what came with that as well was wild. His family was on the East Coast for the most part, and weren't necessarily too close to him the last several years. So, you know, like, there was a lot of ask you me assumptions that were just so hard to take in and hear. And I understand that when you lose a loved one and in this manner, that to a certain extent, there's some blame shifting going on and some like, how could this be? What was this? How did this happen? Like, what took place? And in that process, I had some comments thrown my way that just were completely insensitive and just so difficult to hear, especially when I was already in the place of an emotional whirlwind of a storm within myself. And you know, navigating the coming days with the interaction with his family was, I don't even have words for it right now. I'm so curious to hear about how I shared navigating these emotions, you know, in the moment. I started recording about 20 days after I found him, so we'd already had the service and his family had already left, but I really am looking forward to hearing the hindsight that I will have in sharing about those moments. I haven't been watching the videos at all. It's now almost 9.5 years it will be on launch day, and I'm not sure what my videos are actually saying. I know that I'm processing so much, and I found it to be like really therapeutic to just start communicating on a daily and sometimes multiple times a day basis on everything that was happening in me internally and how I was processing all of my emotions. So it'll be, I'm looking forward to unfolding the whole journey from where I am now and just getting to see where I was at and how I was navigating everything. Something that I mentioned too is just the navigating shock. I stayed in shock all the way up until I landed in panic, and that's panic attacks. I hit panic attacks. It was pretty much like 3 straight days of being in a panic attack, and that was a roller coaster of a ride itself that came with a lot of different actions to try to figure out what was going on with me and what was happening, what was wrong, and a lot of different seeking out help. I remember just sitting with my phone, like calling person after person after person, because I was like, I'm not okay, and I don't know what to do. So at the end of those 3 days, I had to check into the emergency room. I was in fight or flight the whole time. So when you're in that state of mind, all of your hormones are like, my adrenals were just going, and it did so many interesting things as far as my ability to function at any capacity. Like, I couldn't. And so just the realization that up until that time frame where I entered into just complete panic, I know it's part of my journey and many suicide loss survivors' journeys to be in that state, which comforted me to actually hear and realize that I thought something was totally wrong with me. And I had just started going to a support group for others that had lost their partners to suicide. And to hear everyone in the room, really small, intimate groups in person, like 8, 10, 11 people at a time. And it's pretty much the same people for the most part. Some new people come, some people leave, but it's a pretty intimate group. They all were just like, oh, yes, that's so common. Like, oh, like, this is part of your journey. And I remember feeling a bit relieved to a certain extent to understand that what I was going through was grieving, and that it was okay what I was feeling, because part of me had been fighting it. And that was really a big part of what felt like a battle with working through the panic attacks and being in a state of panic, which, for those of us that have been in a state of panic, we completely know and understand that it is not an anxiety attack. They're totally different, and it's almost for me, it's not comparable, because when I was in a state of panic, I could not function. I know there's varying degrees as well, but so just navigating from being in shock, then going into panic, and then in moving through my healing journey, being able to reflect back that that was actually shock that I was in for. And I think it ended up being, I want to say like about 7 weeks that I was in shock before I hit just being in panic. And I actually was in that panic for those 3 days before I checked into the ER. And then I went on quite a journey with the Western medicine. Yes. I don't know if I'll call that a hindrance or what, but definitely was eye-opening to the mental health of our care medically for individuals in our communities, in this culture, and how it's tended to and how it's navigated. It was so surprising to me. I was completely floored. Through that time, they diagnosed me with having PTSD, which makes sense, but they also prescribed these drugs that just completely take my light away, numb me out. There's no feeling, like I'm not even in there. So my journey with panic was really about wanting to control the panic and resist being in a place of need to have something outside of myself to be able to manage the panic. So just diving into that part of my journey more. And then I mentioned also group therapy. My big sister was really adamant in reaching out to me and just requesting that I please begin group therapy. And for me, it was one of the hardest things that I went through in experiencing what a loved one feels like they're doing out of a place of care, and then what they're actually doing. And also, it's like the juxtaposition is that I'm so grateful that I started going to group therapy for suicide loss survivors of partners specifically, but the road to going, it felt so arduous. And especially because I was still in a state of shock, like my ability to function was almost null. I remember when my big sister's daughter was 2 and we were outside playing in the little kiddie pool. Well, she was, and we were outside talking, and she wanted to get in the pool, then out the pool, in the pool, out the pool, like from 1 second to the next. And she'd get out, and then she'd want to start crying because she'd want to get back in the pool. And I was just like, what? She did that for minutes and minutes. It just seemed like a really long time. And my big sister was saying, you know, cognitively, she's literally just in the exact moment of now, which is always a present. There was no before, there's no after. In the moment, she wanted out of the pool, and then the next moment, she wanted in the pool. And that was metaphorically like a good reflection on how a lot of my navigating in my grief journey felt, especially, I want to say like the first several months, but definitely the first several weeks when I was in shock. I didn't have capacity to do anything except for that exact moment that I was in. And it was whatever and wherever that moment took me. So there was a lot of going through that process and learning grace on accepting that I wasn't necessarily to a certain extent capable of being outside of that moment. And I just had to navigate my grieving journey as such. So group therapy will definitely be something that I share and talk about. Cleaning out belongings. that came with a lot of emotion. And there's no, just like grieving, there's no way that there's a right or a wrong time or way to do it or go about it. Just like us, the whole process is beautifully different for every single individual based on your own life experiences and how you're navigating everything. So there's no right or wrong. It's really just tuning in to yourself energetically in a space and place of love and checking in and seeing, like, am I okay to not have these items, or do I still want these items, or do I not want to make any decisions quite yet on what I do with these items? And then embracing whatever that decision is for yourself instead of getting like so much feedback. So many people have input on this journey when they've never been through it. And if you haven't been through it, then you cannot have any input. And I think that's a, you know, has a lot to do with like a lot of things in life in general. But it's just amazing to me how many thoughts come flying out of people's mouths that they think are some way helpful. And I also feel that we come from a place where we want to fix everything, or we don't want to see these emotions. We want to make them better. And so like there's this internal discomfort and inability for the most part for people to actually be able to just hold beautiful space, just filled with love for someone that's going through whatever type of scenario they're going through, and especially grieving, to just hold that space for someone. Part of what I also experienced a lot, and I think it's really a common part of being on this journey regarding suicide loss, is cross-examining myself over and over and over. Every time like I remembered or learned or found something new in our love story and in his life or about his life, it took me plugging that one bit of information in and then going through the whole entire scenario over and over and over again. It was this incredibly exhausting cross-examination of myself. There was just so much guilt, and also I didn't have anger towards him at all. I had anger towards me and wanting to understand, like, what did I miss? How did I miss this? And every new bit of information or something that came across differently than I had heard it the first time, any way that I had changed the lens that I was looking through required of me to completely process that entire storyline again and understand like where or what happened to where I missed this, and how could have I missed this. So like that part of my grieving process was so arduous. It took a long time, what really felt like a long time, for me to be able to accept and lean in and let go of the control. And so that'll be a big part of what's in the videos and what I'll be sharing as well. Oh, another thing with the cross-examination is how grief gets held in our body. I have a saying that I really like, and it goes something like, that which we bury rots. And it's like, it's such a healing reminder to me that what emotion is its energy in motion. And that is so healthy to be felt and to be released, and for that energy to move and flow through our bodies, to acknowledge it, to look at it, to accept it, to embrace it, to feel it, and to know that it's okay to feel. I mean, that's part of our human journey here, and getting to be human is getting to feel all of the emotions that come with it and allowing oneself to be okay to feel all of the emotions without wanting to beat oneself up and say, why do I feel this again? Or how come I feel this for so long? Or when is this going to change or end? And that was constantly part of my journey. I had just such expectations on what I felt like my grieving journey was supposed to look like and feel like. And each time where I felt like I made one step forward and then something happened, I felt like I made 18 steps backwards. And also, part of my light being found and finding the light is a yin yang has always been something special to me. What is above is below, and what is in is without. And even my first little tattoo is a little yin yang on my wrist. And so when light being found came to me, I was like, oh my gosh, that's it. Because I had already saved finding the light. And part of one of the things that I think about for how I felt when I was in such a dark place, I had to have all the lights on in the house. I don't know for how long, but it seemed like a long time because that's how dark everything was. And I can still see this vision, but I would envision me at the bottom of a tunnel, and I would like my fingers and knuckles and stuff just seeming like they were all in such pain because I'd be trying to climb out the well to find the light. And like then when I'd fall down, it just seems like, oh my gosh, my hands hurt and they're so bruised and painful right now, and I have to try to climb back out this well. And so it's definitely metaphorically part of the journey I went on being a suicide loss survivor. It was just what felt like a struggle to find the light, also know that light was being found, and also know that I am the light being, and I found myself even more so going through part of this journey. Another thing is letting go of the expectations. I think I mentioned that, but that was a really big one for me. And then also something that I early on really gravitated towards and felt that I had a connection to was the podcast, What's Your Grief? So if you have not checked that out, I recommend that you do. It might really resonate with you. There are two gals that do the podcast, and they have like a great connection and energetic interaction with one another. It's a great podcast, and I learned a lot on my journey where I felt so isolated in so many different ways. So, What's Your Grief? But one of the things that they talked about as well is being an introvert or being an extrovert. And when I listened to that podcast, it was so helpful for me. Because I'm introverted, I'm an ambivert, and I can be in all scenarios. But ideally, I really enjoy like really close connections, and I'm introverted. When I'm in extroverted scenarios where it's a lot of surface talk, I find it to be quite energy draining. And so being able to kind of understand the grieving process and being in that state of mind and how I can help myself in being able to communicate with my loved ones on what I'm needing or how I'm needing them to show up was super insightful for me. Because a big part of what I did not understand in going through my journey, especially the first several months, was how to ask my loved ones to just show up for me, to just check on me, and to just hold space for me. And so when I kept getting asked, and when I say kept, it felt so infrequent. But when different loved ones would ask, like, what do you need? I'm like, I don't know what I need. I didn't know. And I wish I would have understood then that I need to feel loved right now. I just need you to just show up and maybe be with me and just hold space. And for whatever that looks like, if I'm crying, just sobbing, whatever emotion I'm going through, for you to just love me through it and let me be there, but you be with me. So that was something that I wish I understood a little earlier in my journey. And then one other thing that I wanted to share, kind of along the lines of that quote I mentioned about that which you bury rots. It manifests and comes up in our bodies in different ways. Sometimes it's called dis-ease. But there's a really wonderful book for me being able to kind of understand that a little bit deeper. And it is The Body Keeps the Score. So there's a possibility you've already come across it, but that's also a really wonderful resource as well. So every episode, I am going to share a story with you. One of the things that I felt almost immediately, besides feeling like, oh my gosh, I have to record this. My background is in psychology, and so my mind was blown. Nothing academically I had ever gone through or been educated about could have possibly prepared me for such an event in my life that came with such emotions that had no words to describe. And so I kept feeling right away, this has to be recorded. Like, my mind is blown. This has to be recorded. And so not only recording it, but I also started to feel, I guess fearful would be the right word, that I was going to start to lose some of our memories, and I didn't want to lose them. And so every time I had a special memory of us, I went and jotted it down. And I actually didn't really share too much about Jason leaving, except for immediate family, until November 11th, 2015, which was his 6 months after parting Mother Earth. And I had my book already done by then. And in addition to that, I shared with everyone on social media that he had taken his life. And I wanted to bring awareness to suicide loss. And we don't really know what that number truly is. And far more are affected by a suicide loss. So the numbers are vast. But I did make a book, and I call it A Tribute and Celebration of Our Love. Here is the cover of the book. There's our little Mama Heezy bow. And then the back of the book is one of my favorite photographs that I've ever taken. We were on vacation. We were in the coast of Oregon, and this was on the ocean. And it was him and Jai walking. This was one of his favorite photos ever, but he had a blue poop bag in his hand. And he was like, oh my gosh, this would be the most amazing photo if I didn't have the blue poop bag. And I'm like, let me get it. Let me remove it. So when I look at the picture, I kind of have a smile like that. And I always feel like this picture, because it's so white, even though that's the ocean and the sky, I always feel like it's him headed off to home, back to having his energy be elsewhere. And it's extra, extra sweet to me that Jai is in this photograph as well. She is our beautiful, wonderful mini Aussie. We got her at 7.5 weeks, and she just left Mother Earth. She is now with Jason just 8 weeks ago now. 8 weeks and a couple of days ago. So it's special to have that picture. But I'm going to read the very first part, and it just says, keeping our memories alive in celebration and honor of the time we've had together and the love we got to share with one another. We miss you beyond belief. Until we meet again, I'll long for you in my dreams. Loving you always, your hun, your babe, your ladies. As I sit here fondly reminiscing about our world together, I find myself writing to you, about you, to us, about us, in third person, fourth person, and many other persons. I love you, babe, to no end. But I will share a story at the end of each podcast. And then I'm also going to share a quote that really resonates with me. So for this podcast, the quote is by S. McNutt. And it is, fall in love with taking care of yourself. Fall in love with the path of deep healing. Fall in love with becoming the best version of yourself, but with patience, with compassion, and respect to your own journey. And that, for me, sets the tone about what this podcast is about for me. And I'm really looking forward to sharing my journey with you and navigating this journey of suicide, loss, grieving, and what it entails, and the work that I put in and how I put it in for myself specifically can look totally different for you. But how I got through and went through it all to get to the other side of it. And grief and grieving will always be a part of my journey, but it's not a part of where I stay. It's a part of where I've navigated through. And at times I may visit it and nod that I've had these experiences in life, and I understand a lot more about life in general because of them. And yes, there are hardships, and yes, they came with suffering. And I allowed myself to feel them and move through and with them. If there is anything in the podcast episode with like the story or the quote that brought something within you up and you want to share it, or that resonated with you, please leave a comment down below, and the thumbnail will say S1E1 for season 1, episode 1, and I can connect with you there. And then also, Jason's initials were JAM, and when I first started recording, I missed his hugs like crazy. Even I had a few friends that said like he hugs with his soul. He just had these amazing hugs. And you know, you exchange oxytocin when you have like human connection of a hug too, and your hearts are just heart to heart. And so after he left, I longed for his hugs. And at the same time, his middle and last initial is AM. So I had felt like we need to wake up to what's going on with military suicide, especially the Army, which is 2 times that greater than any other branch. However, since I've learned and realized and understood that when you're in a field where you see and endure and feel and are around a lot of trauma, so law enforcement, paramedics, firefighters, our soul dyers, military men and women, they feel these traumas that they are surrounded by in navigating their professions. And it is the top way that these individuals leave life, is by taking their life. So really it has to do with trauma. And how are we able to work through and navigate our trauma through traumatic experiences in the field, coupled with our own life experiences that have been seemingly, in a way, mirroring some form of trauma as well. And so really working through the trauma and coming to like a acceptance and a resolution and a leaning into it for the healing. But so wherever you are at in your journey, I'm sending you so much love and light and healing. And I'm also sending and giving you these big, amazing, soul-soothing JAM hugs. All right. Thank you for joining me today. Please subscribe if you want to have the next episode in your inbox. Until then, take good care.